since she took birth in 1924, she grew up in communist China, and as an artist in a traditional school, and produced a lot of artwork at the time. And on one occasion, she was allowed to go out of China for some conference, and she just never returned to China, giving up all her artwork, actually, which is a big thing, obviously, as an artist, to leave your artwork behind. It's like leaving part of yourself behind. So she left part of herself behind in China. And then, somehow or other, she met Srila Prabhupada, who was coming as a representative in an Indian tradition, and who was very learned in Indian scripture. At that time, Prabhupada didn't really have any movement or anything like that when he met her. He was still alone. But somehow or other, they embarked on a project together. That project has been published as The Light of the Bhagavad. And originally, the book was actually done in a coffee table format. So a kind of bigger production with very nice rendition of the paintings. And that's still available on some websites on the internet, if anyone's interested. Like Alibris still sells them. What I have, though, I have copies of this book, Light of the Bhagavad, somehow or other. Just before I came here, I was looking for this material because I thought it would be an interesting topic to go by these slides. Because these are slides based on nature, paintings based on nature. And nature is something we are part of. And therefore, nature is part of ourselves. We are familiar with Carl Jung, who came up with the concept of archetypes. And basically, recognizing symbols out of nature which exist within us and have a meaning within. So all these paintings are actually of quite a symbolic meaning, and we will go through the symbols. Of course, we begin first with kirtan, and to warm up the atmosphere, some transcendental sound, and then we'll look at the art, and then some kirtan again. Evening. We are looking at rain. We are looking at thunder and clouds that are building up. Oh, for how long? For how long have people been waiting? For how long? When finally such clouds would come after the long and dry hot season. Finally, the monsoon clouds are building up. The land is parched. All living beings are just thirsting and looking forward just to relief. The new clouds that have appeared are bringing hope of new life to come. The dry landscape, which for so long has been deprived, depicts a life of frustration, a life where although we tried, it just didn't work, it didn't fulfill. And somehow, we became a little hopeless because it was too long, bordering depression. But then those clouds suddenly bring hope and change the entire landscape. And suddenly the mountains and the entire landscape is now ready to receive this water. Farmers have built little walls around their fields, ready to catch and retain the water. Everyone is ready to take advantage of the opportunities that are coming. And at the first rains, right, just as the frogs are taking great pleasure in the rain, so in the same way, one who for a long time has felt the dry life of materialism, which doesn't satisfy, and then experiences the fresh rains, experience actually that this is natural. So those who have been deprived from spirituality in their life and now are taking it up, with great joy, they recognize the new spiritual taste, and they sing along with transcendental sound. Water now begins to flow everywhere, and the land becomes covered and drenched in so many ways. As a result, beautiful flowers begin to flourish everywhere, attracting butterflies and other such idyllic creatures. And the landscape is now turning into paradise. Desires that for long have been resting within us and just for long did not find an answer. Now, at last, it's working out. At last, life is going somewhere. Finally. But there are others who are not sweet-natured people, who are ready to exploit the circumstances and to exploit others. Or maybe that personality also within us, another archetype. Are we now also going to be driven by greed? And is there no end now? Now that some success has come, are we going to try for more and more than what comes natural, so that we become absorbed and obsessed, and that all of our energy and time goes in accumulating and scheming and cheating and so many other ways? But life, natural life, continues at its own pace, in its own way, even if those who try to manipulate are trying to squeeze as much as they can from the earth. Others say no. We take what naturally comes on our path. And we are satisfied with that. We will not cultivate unlimited needs and unlimited desire. Yes, some desire we will have, but not at the expense of suffering of others. Our desires will not only include our own happiness, but the happiness of all. And thus, we are looking for a peaceful world which sustains all varieties of life. The new water is creating powerful waves. Some get swept away. Some just, it goes beyond their control. And their newfound enjoyment gets out of hand. Or what to do. They may take too many intoxicants, get addicted, or some other form of indulgence. Their senses become everything in their life. Day and night, they are slaving. Day and night, they are working to fulfill the needs of these senses. Day and night. Kamadinam kutidam. Bonita Duni Desam Desam Jatamahi Nakaruna Natapatai. But it is said in scriptures that the senses are merciless.
The senses will push us, and the senses
will never be satisfied. Never. Meanwhile, time moves on, and gradually the path to enlightenment
becomes overgrown by grasses
and forgotten.
And our spiritual life that was once a clear goal to us has now become a background thing. You would hardly notice it, that once there was a path. Only those who knew, actually, still see the path going upwards. Otherwise, now, kind of in the background.
But again, new fresh rains are coming, and the monsoon continues.
And the landscape is slowly,
slowly changing. A rainbow appears in the sky.
A rainbow is known in India as the Indradhanush, or the bow of Indra. It is said that, and the bow of Indra is different from any other bow in the sense that it is a bow that has no string. It has no string. It doesn't require a string because it is transcendental. And this rainbow is representing the bridge between material and spiritual life.
Yes.
We cannot just be enamored by material successes because we know it's not everywhere the same. One time I saw this little video clip about the life. This is like, I saw it maybe 5 years ago. And this was a video clip showing the hardships that Australian children had to go through, teenagers, really. You know, on Saturday, their parents would go, you know, and buy the groceries for the whole week and drive the whole car loaded with all these things into the garage. And then those teenagers, they had to carry it all the way from the car to the kitchen, you know. Oh, God, you know. I mean, rough. And then they had an iPod, you know. They had an iPod of only 1 gigabyte. God, miserable, you know. So the clip started off like that. And then somewhere along the way, it shifted to kids in Vietnam who were playing with like old bomb shells in the forest and things like that, and showed the contrasts. But yes, so it is like that in the world. Karma sometimes gives us an easy life where everything is easily available, and other times a life of hardship. There is no guarantee. It all changes in time. Ultimately, it cannot be on the material platform. Peacocks are by no means just your average birds. Even in ancient traditional times, the emperors have always kept the peacocks at the royal court. It doesn't matter whether we go to Egypt or to ancient India or to ancient European courts. Everywhere we'll find the peacock. Peacocks are special. There's no doubt about it. I have seen during the rainy season how the peacocks dance and their tails go upwards. And I have seen a fight between a cobra and a peacock. And it was very interesting. Because the cobra stood up and its hood was white and spread. And then the peacock just lifted its tail and started to move the feathers and make a rustling sound. And then the peacock began to move its head from one side to the other side. And then the peacock, and then the snake began to move from one side to the other side. And the peacock would just continue the rustling feathers and keep the snake like in this kind of hypnotic rhythm until at one point, and then suddenly this peacock would just go like, peck, right on the head. You know, finished. And it was really impressive. I mean, what can I say? Peacocks are not ordinary birds. I remember the peacocks from when I was a child. Peacock! Peacock! Even my initials actually are peacock. No, my legal name is actually peacock. Yeah. It was and when I was a kid, my first name was Paul, you know, there was a boy in my street who had a speech problem, so he used to call me Paul, which is the Dutch word for peacock, so that became my nickname, you know, and then the kids would say, okay, show us your feathers, and I would hold my coat up, you know, I'd bend over and hold my coat up to show that I could do it, you know. Peacock. Yes? Peacocks. So many peacocks. Live in Vrindavan, land of Krishna. In that land of Krishna.
Everywhere.
Nature is very nice. There are cranes, peacocks. It is a land
full of natural wealth.
Farmers are harnessing the forces of nature in a simple way. Not like with big factories, but just simple tools. And with that, they manage to survive. Because the essence is not economic development. The essence is Krishna.
Finally.
Here he is,
Krishna, in Chinese style. You know, all little top knots. A very interesting meeting of a Chinese lady who is telling an Indian story, somehow or other. Of a place where she's never been, of a world she's never seen, but somehow or other she's seeing it with her mind's eye, and with her Chinese mind's eye, and she's painting Krishna. Krishna with his friends in Vrindavan,
the world of Krishna. So now we're going away from materialism, now we're going to a spiritual realm.
Yeah. There are, the peacock is there, as we can see in that abode written down. Krishna has exchanges along with his brother Balaram, and various foodstuffs are offered to him. Krishna is the protector of the cows. The cow. This has always been, in my mind, a great mystery. When I was a kid, I used to have comic books. Who doesn't? And one of these comic books was Tintin in Tibet. Right? And Tintin in Tibet was my favorite comic book. And in there was a sacred cow from India. They were in India boarding a flight. And just before boarding the flight, this sacred cow was lying on the road and wouldn't move. And the taxi driver said, sorry, it cannot move, of course. It's not exactly like that anymore.
but it raised an interesting question. Sacred cows? Cows? Sacred? Where I'm from, the Netherlands, we have lots of cows, but they're not exactly seen as sacred or something. Cows, you know. You know, it's like they make jokes with cows, right? Sacred? I couldn't figure it out. Why sacred? But then we see the cows. The cows are beneficial. Whatever is produced from the cow is beneficial for the earth. The dung of the cow fertilizes the land. The milk of the cow is providing so many foodstuffs and so many preparations. Today I saw some people and they had a bar of chocolate. Created some excitement and some different people had different pieces and so on, some big, some small, as chocolate goes around, right? But what would chocolate be without milk, right? I mean, no question, right? So many things in our life, actually the cow. So the protection of the cow is very closely connected to Krishna. It said the cow is basically the foundation for a healthy society. In a healthy society, the cows and the bulls are protected. The cows provide foodstuffs. The bulls till the field, provide grains. So in this way, an agricultural-based society is a society which is in touch with reality. Not a world of based on nuts and bolts.
Crunch, 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 crunch.
Nuts and bolts. It must be nuts. Better milk.
So,
in this way, the world of Krishna provides us with an ideal of how society should actually function. A society based on love. A society based on service. A society based on natural beauty, not artificial.
Yeah, carry on.
In this way, we can appreciate this Chinese art, which is taking us on a spiritual journey, and later on I will zoom in on some of these slides. Now we will again continue a little bit to sing, and Nimai, he will continue to move the slides. You can put them on automatic for a while.
So the seasons
are always changing, and the seasons are moving in cycles. Sometimes spring, symbolizing new life; summer, flourishing; autumn, gradual dwindling; then winter, period of the drier period, the denial period, and then finally again new life begins in spring. Like this, seasons are rotating, and we are in life also experiencing the same. We begin new endeavors, and they begin to develop and grow. And then, at one point, it's time to move on, and they begin to dwindle. And again, we start something fresh, And in this way, life is a constant renewal, which we somehow or other are experiencing. So it is said that the sage or the wise person, is not swept up by these external changes.
An hour late, better late than never.
So the wise is looking at the constant reality. If we take the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita is a book which in the first chapter describes a difficult, a trying, temporary situation. Namely, there is a war, an impending war, and one family, maybe more families, but the particular royal family that is under scrutiny, is divided over both sides in the battlefield. So it creates in Arjuna, it creates an internal crisis, because here he stands and he sees his family members ready to go to war against each other. This is insanity. What are we doing here? I'm going to have no part of this at all. That is his mood. And Arjuna is quite overwhelmed by the whole situation. And who would not be? But then Krishna is there. And Krishna has a different vision. Krishna has a vision of eternity, a vision of timelessness. And he sees every living being in that timeless perspective as eternal. He understands that within every living being, the life-giving force, the soul or Atma, is eternal. That particle will never cease to exist. Nahanyate hanyamani sarire. It is not slain when the body is slain. It continues. Najayate mriyate vakadachin. It doesn't take birth, nor does it die. That is the nature of that particular spiritual spark of life. So the underlying reality that is always there is the eternal reality. But when the material nature either denies us so many desires or overwhelms us by fulfilling so many of our desires, in both cases we can become distracted. We become distracted. Why am I not successful when others are? That can be one scenario. Or, how successful am I? Just look at me. What a wonderful life I have. And either, whether one is deprived or whether one is living in abundance, in both cases, one could forget the underlying eternal spiritual reality. So the aim in life is to live both. A life on the physical plane, a life of being in harmony with nature, in our body, a life of non-violence in our dealings with nature, a life based on values, honesty, knowledge, tolerance, wisdom, spirituality, tolerance, all these kind of qualities. Being in control of mind and senses, not just being thrown here and there by the mind, I see it, I must have it. Take my credit card away, somehow or other. You know, and I'm talking shop, and can't stop. Addiction. So, no. That one can control the mind. So yoga certainly has been designed for controlling the mind, particularly for bringing the body in balance and harmony, and then pacify the mind, and then control the senses. But that's in itself only beneficial if after that, when the senses are brought under control, then we get absorbed in a spiritual reality. It is in that way that we become uplifted. So that's where our mantra comes in, because it is that mantra is bringing in a spiritual dimension. It is sound, fully invested with all spiritual potency. And let me simply chant. That mantra will immediately uplift us. So the evening is basically centered around this theme. The theme of the seasons. The always changing seasons. The voice of the seasons. And the fruits of the seasons. The fruits of nature. Even that motorcycle is a fruit of nature. A somewhat passionate fruit of nature. And whoever drives that thing wants others to know that he's driving it. I think so. That must be the underlying thing. I think that's why you have it. Just want others to know. And we know. Yes. So, all these things are fruits of nature. But ultimately, we are looking for those things that strengthen us in our well-being, physically, mentally, and then we have the spiritual connection. And when these three elements are in position, then our life becomes complete. We'll chant again. So then, when one takes the spiritual life, then we encounter ourselves. And even although we are in agreement, yes, a life of goodness, yes, a life of mercy, yes, a life with Krishna. But then, how to do it? When still the changes are there within us, when still at times we feel dry and hankering for fresh taste and new inspiration. How to do this? A life with Krishna. How can it be done? But Krishna himself is the answer to this question. Because Krishna himself is unlimited. Although we see pictures of Krishna sometimes, looks very simple. When I first became involved with this Eastern way of thinking, I went overland to India, and I came to the city of Benares, and there I met an old sadhu, the type with long grey hair and a beard and everything, who would say,
what is your country, what is your name, and I would tell him these things. And then one day, the old sadhu told me a story, and the story I will tell you today. Once upon a time, there was a young man, and this young man had heard an ancient tale about the forest, and that somewhere in the forest there was a desire tree, a tree that could fulfill any desire. Many a man had gone to look for that tree, but none had ever found. So then another adventurous young man, eager to find that tree that could bring him all good fortune, according to the ancient tale, set off on his journey. And as he went into the forest, it was a long journey. It was a long journey, sometimes through thick foliage, sometimes over mountains and hills and so on. By the evening, he was exhausted. And so, looking for a place where to spend the night, he found an open area in the forest. And he sat down under this tree. Rest a bit. And then, somewhere at a distance, he heard a roaring tiger. No. God, tigers. Oh my God. I hope there's not gonna be any tigers here. Next moment, huge tiger jumped out of the forest and right there and pounced on him. And you know, there's an ancient story, an old tale about the forest. Once there was a young man, and he went on a journey into the forest to discover this desire tree. He had heard, he traveled extensively over hills and valleys. It was an exhausting journey. And in the evening, looking for a place to rest, he found an open spot in the forest. And there, leaning against a tree, he heard a tiger roar in the distance. He thought, oh God, I hope that no tiger will appear. And suddenly, a tiger came out of nowhere. Out of nowhere, this tiger was there in front of him. And I'll save you the rest of the details. And once upon a time, there was a young man. And this young man, he had heard that there was a desire tree in the forest. And he went on a journey to discover this desire tree. It was a journey and a half over mountains, valleys, hills, and God knows what. In the evening, exhausted as he was, he found an open place in the forest. And you guess what? Yes, there was a tree, and he leaned against that tree, and then, you know, a tiger roared in a distance. And he was thinking to himself, I hope that there's really no tigers going to be around here. And next moment, this tiger just appeared, and I'll save you the rest of the details, and so on, and once upon a time. Okay, so this Baba was telling me this story, yeah, and that was all he did. He gave no explanation, he just told me. So, you know, I think that it is a story about the cycle of birth and death, and that it is a story based upon knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, that whatever state of being one has at the end of life, that will carry one forward to the next birth. So guess what happened to those fellows under the tree? Yeah, they of course got devoured by a tiger, but the last thing they thought of was tiger. And thus they became tiger. And then, waiting for the next young man to come, you know what I mean? In this way, there were plenty of tigers around that desire tree. And thus the story continued. Life after life, after life, after life. Well, it was something, you know. I mean, I had to
It was a spiritual experience, and it really gave me something, yes. I got some sort of sense of detachment, life after life, the same thing. And I decided I would start to meditate. And I was meditating in the evening on the bank of the Ganges, seated on earth. And there was water, and there was fire, and there was sky, and all the elements were there, and I was getting serious. And then, after some deep meditation, I heard this sound in my ears. Mosquitoes. Millions of mozzies everywhere, all over the place. You know what I mean? So, well, that was the end of my yogic pursuits. Nothing. Gosh, you know, nothing worse than that. So the next day, I started during the daytime in the hot sun, determined, and sat down looking at the river at one point. Deep breath, pranayama in, you know. Kumbhaka, keep that air inside, you know what I'm saying? And slowly release the air, slowly, you know. Eyelids sort of one third closed, you know, looking at that one point in the Ganga. And then, lo and behold, a dolphin, believe it or not, jumped from my spot. So I think, I'm a yogi, I'm self-realized. You know, I've made it perfection of meditation. But then, it was for one day exciting, but the next day I was thinking, yeah, and now what, you know? A fish is just a fish, you know? What do I make of this? What do I do with this now, you know, with my fishy powers? I knew that there was more to meditation than the average person would think. And I knew that there was some sort of sign, whatever that fish was, right? I took it as a sign that I should do something more. So I carried on, I looked, and meanwhile, from one temple, they were chanting a mantra. I guess it was a recording, you know, because it was 24 hours a day. I don't believe it was real, but it was good, though, you know. It was Siriram Jairam Jairam, Siriram Jairam Jairam, Siriram Jairam Jairam, Siriram Jairam Jairam. That Siri, you know, that was like too good, you know. Oh, my musical ear loved it, you know. Did it see? Pakka Banaras Hindi is like that. So that mantra also entered. So little by little, spiritual things enter when they're destined, and we gradually begin to see that we are not the doer. When that realization comes, that we are not the doer, but that actually things are simply running by a higher order, by a higher plan. And within that, yes, we can do things, you know what I mean? We can move things from one side to the street or the other. We can move around within our karma. We can't go beyond. I'll give you an example. I was in Calcutta walking with a friend of mine. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Calcutta, you know, is a black hole in the universe, I'm sorry to say. But it's like, I never had it with Calcutta, you know. Everything is black. The walls are just black, black, black. Oh my God, Calcutta. When I'm in Calcutta, I have this itch. I want to get out of here now. So I had that while I was walking with my friend in Calcutta. And I said to him, oh, look at these black walls. I said, horrible city of black walls. He said, what do you mean? Calcutta, city of beautiful gardens. My friend was 2 meters tall. And he could look over the walls. He had different karma. I was seeing only walls. I tell you, when I see Calcutta, it's a black city. But when my friend sees it, it's a city of beautiful gardens. Because by his karma, he has another level of access than I have. He can just see what I cannot, and perceive that same place in a different way. So we are limited by our karma, somehow or other. Yeah. Our vision is limited. We are in that dimension of our karma, the reaction of our previous activities. And within it, yes, we have some scope, some variety. But can we really go beyond? Ordinarily not. And there will be successes, periods that everything will come our way, when there's like flood and it's just happening, and dry periods. These periods will be there. But the constant factor, is A, who are we? And that we figured out, we are a soul. But then, in what world do we live? A world that runs by an order, and it's not ours. A world that produces flowers that we did not design. A world that has nature that touches us so deep. Why? Why do we want to feel like writing poetry when we see such natural beauty? Why? All these things are there. There is a higher order, one above us, a higher plan. So that is the next point. We are eternal spiritual beings, and when we begin to fit into the higher plan, instead of getting lost in our own schemes of manipulation, then we enter into another dimension. And that is really the beginning of the spiritual dimension, the world of the Supreme Lord. And that is this mantra meditation which brings us there. And so we live in this world, as part of this world, but also at the same time in a relationship with Krishna. Everyone is looking for relationship because alone is difficult. How can we deal with life alone? Who can be alone for a long time? Alone? Even in Nietzsche's Antichrist, right, there is a sage seated in a forest, and he sits in a cave in the mountain, and he's been there for a long time. He knows the sun is now playing on the rocks just about 20 meters to the left, and in about 10 minutes the sun will shine in his cave. He knows the same routine. He knows it. But somehow or other, although he's been there for a long time, he has decided to leave. And he comes down to the mountain. And as the sage comes down the mountain, people are eager to hear his wisdom. But the sage, he has a hidden message. He has come to the conclusion that there is no God. There is no God. Afterwards, Nietzsche. So it had to be. That's obvious. But then what? Then what? Then alone. Then again alone. Even in the midst of many people, alone. Somehow or other, alone. It is only when that spiritual connection is there, that we are never alone. So that relationship is the only one that can take away our loneliness. Sometimes we look for a relationship in this world to get rid of our loneliness, but such relationships can sometimes be very sweet, and other times there are thunderstorms, sometimes UFOs, unidentified flying objects. What shall I say? I have experience, believe me. Beyond one. mind. But without Krishna, without that spiritual anchor, it remains incomplete.
So, Srila Prabhupada wrote a book called Light of the Bhagavad.
Somehow or other, we brought some copies. Nimai actually carried them. It was kind of spiritual the way they came, because, you know, this book is hard to get. It's not really in any shop, but somehow or other we were in South Africa before coming to Australia, and on the last day we somehow or other got these books. You know, they had some over there and we got them. So it must have, I was thinking, well, it's meant to be for you for some reason, I don't know why. So I wanted to bring this to you, this book known as Light of the Bhagavad. I think we have 25 copies, right? And we don't sell them. You can, because they are meant for you, can give a donation to Nimai. Since he carried them all the way from the car to the kitchen. So, poor boy. If you give him a good donation, maybe he can get an extra gigabyte. Oh boy, that would be nice. Yeah. So at the end, Nima will set them up over there for you. That's kind of special, you know what I'm saying? It's not like an ordinary thing. It's like somehow or other it came for this program only, and to Australia out of the blue. And it is really very nice book. I mean, I think you should. Lots of pictures in here are not as good as in the big edition. Well, what do you want? You know, if you want them. I mean, you know. If you want the big and the fancy pics, then you gotta get it from the internet. So, I thank you. And I don't know, does anyone have a question? Maybe some comment. And otherwise, I enter into the last song of the evening, which is. I hope you appreciate it this evening. I did, because such evenings are not entertainment, although maybe entertaining in some ways, but such evenings are actually a meditation for whoever partakes, and I'm also one of the participants, so in that way, evenings like this can establish and deepen our relationship with Krishna. And once that happens, the season may change. Bring their fruits and whatnot. But being with Krishna gives us a deep and inner satisfaction, not dependent on external things. So, thank you so much. If you've got a copy of the book already, you're lucky. I don't have any money left. You have any left?
Half is gone.
Only half? Oh dear. You're going to be carrying on a long way. There may be some will help you out to relieve you from